A very good evening to you and welcome to Beyond Belief here on Clare FM. You're warmly welcome as you join us on this Sunday evening, the 16th of January 2022. Father Jerry Kenny in the chair this week to present our weekly programme of Beyond Belief. And tonight, on our guest list, we will hear from Bishop Fintan Monaghan, Bishop of Killaloe, and his reflection during the week on Morning Focus here on Clare FM about how the Church is coping at this time. And as we face into the new year and begin to make better resolutions for healthier and better living, we will hear about the art of spiritual direction and what it means, as Father Brian Grogan, an Irish Jesuit, joins us and explains to us what spiritual direction is about. We will also have our book review, and that will be coming up later on in the programme. And I'll be chatting soon to my colleague, Stephen Fletcher, all the way over in England. But first, we start with some music. And here is an old classic from Ralph McTell, performed for us by the High Kings, The Streets of London.
I've seen the old man close down market, kicking up the papers with his worn out shoes. In his eyes you see no pride, until you sleep by his side. Yesterday's paper telling yesterday's news. Have you seen the old girl walks the streets of London, dirt in her hair and her clothes in rags? She's no time for talking, she just keeps right on walking, carrying her home into carry your bag. So how can you tell me you're lonely and say for you that the sun don't shine? Let me take you by the hand and lead you through the streets of London. I'll show you something that'll make you change your mind. In the all-night cafe, quarter past 11, that same old man sitting there on his own, he's looking at the world over the rim of his teacup. Each tea lasts an hour and he wanders home alone. So how can you tell me you're lonely and say for you that the sun don't shine? Let me take you by the hand and lead you through the streets of London. I'll show you something that'll make you change your mind. Memory fading with metal ribbons that he wears, and in the winter city the rain cries a little pity for one more forgotten hero in a world that doesn't care. So how can you tell me you're lonely
and say for you that the sun don't shine. Let me take you by the hand, lead you through the streets of London. I'll show you something that'll make you change. And how can you tell me you're lonely and say for you that the sun don't shine? Let me take you by the hand and lead you through the streets of London. I'll show you something that'll make you change your mind.
That was the Ralph McTell classic, Streets of London, sung there by the High Kings. You're tuned to Beyond Belief on this Sunday evening, the 16th of January. Well, I'm very happy to be joined in conversation across the waters with our colleague, Stephen Fletcher. Good evening to you, Stephen.
Good evening, Jerry. Great to be with you again.
Grand. Well, just listening to that classic song, the Streets of London there. But we are joining you now from Milton Keynes, up the road from London. And what is things like at the moment in London and in the UK in general?
Yeah, we're well. The sun has been shining this week. You know, we had a spell of very grey and miserable with drizzle and rain, but its last few days leading up to the weekend have been bright and sunny, so we're fortunate, and so that lifts the spirits. Also, I noticed this morning that it's getting brighter in the morning. We don't have to have the lights on when we get up in the morning here, so you know, that's another sign that spring can't be far away, Jerry.
No, in fact, a few days here this week, it's almost been very spring-like. A little cool, all right, in the morning and the evening, but sun shining and clear skies and very, very spring-like indeed. I see, though, that we're still struggling with the Omicron virus across the world, and particularly in our own situation and in England. It's becoming worrisome, I suppose, at this stage. And hopefully they're hoping here that it will have reached a peak, and then that we might be able to address the next stage of where we go.
Yeah. I'm afraid I was misled last week. It just shows how quickly it changes. There were signs that the numbers were decreasing, and that's what I said when we were talking last week. However, I'm afraid the numbers are still increasing here. You know, they had a dip, but they're now climbing again. And yeah, it is a worry, Jerry. And goodness me, I just hope that one day when you and I chat, the main topic of conversation will not be this terrible virus.
Please God, we will get to that stage sooner rather than later, because I think people, we're all getting a little wearisome, and, you know, it has put a pause on so much of life and on so much normal activity for all of us. And it's hopefully something that we will begin to make our way through and come out of, especially for businesses and for those that are working in hospital situations and those who are waiting operations or in any way looking for medical support. This is a very difficult time for them, added to by the presence of the virus and all the precautions that need to be taken.
Yeah, but one day we will have a COVID-free program, Jerry.
please God. There's actually a pub, I think, up at the country, and last week they introduced a swear jar where you put €2, anybody in the pub speaking or using the word COVID-19 or talking about the virus has to put €2 into the jar as a means of trying to stop conversations around COVID. So maybe we should move on as well. But I see this past week has been a little bit controversial for a lot of leadership across the world in sport, with the tennis champion Djokovic getting into trouble in Australia, with our own Pope Francis getting into trouble for what he said in the Vatican at a general audience. And, you know, your own leadership and politicians over there struggling with the breach of rules around the COVID and all of that. So, you know, it's a difficult time, I suppose.
It is. I'm not a particular tennis fan, but I have been following what's been going on in Australia. It's all a matter of rules, isn't it? And the ordinary members of the public in Australia are very concerned that there seems to be someone who's found a way to get round the restrictions that the rest of them seem to have been following. Obviously, the tennis fans, want the man to come in, but the general people who've been suffering under the restrictions, and they've been very strict in Australia, they think the government should take firmer action. So that's one thing. And of course, we've got the situation in the UK at the moment where there appear to have been parties that the government has allowed to happen despite all the restrictions. And if you go back, just think back to Golfgate in Galway. You know, this is the public kicking up and saying, we're not having this. We're not having one rule for our rulers and another rule for ordinary people. You know, the time when people are having to say goodbye to their families alone. You know, they can't be with their dying relatives. And yet the rules are very clear, and it appears that some people try to bend them or break them. And that's applying whether it's tennis in Australia or golf in Galway or parties in Number 10 Downing Street. I think people are prepared to stand up and say, look, you know, this is just not fair. We are looking for it across the board, and everyone should be complying. And I think that's the sort of thing. And it leads to people feeling that their leaders are detached from everyday life.
Well, a lot of people would say there's something similar on a different scale happened this past week or 10 days to Pope Francis, because at one of his general audiences in Rome, he was talking on the general topic of adoption, particularly referring to the role of Saint Joseph in the Gospels and praising people who took on the challenge of adopting children to provide those children with a better life. But as is the wont of Pope Francis, he often leaves script and goes off to talk free-handedly around something that comes into his mind. And as a result of that, it ended up with headlines across the world. One of them in the New York Times says, Pope scolds couples who choose pets over kids. And CNN News, which is operating right throughout the world as well, had a headline, opting for pets over children is selfish and takes away our humanity, says Pope Francis. What seems to have happened, as I said, is the context was that he was talking about adoption in general, but went on to this thing about that sometimes maybe couples feel that they won't have children and that they replace that with pets. Now, it sounds very harsh. And it sounds to me to be some sort of thing as well that almost is out of character with the normal Pope Francis that we are used to and his compassion for people. But the commentary all around that particular instance has definitely taken fire here in Ireland and throughout the world as well. But it seems that in the Western world particularly, it has caused an awful lot of upset. And understandably, because the whole thing of child rearing and childbearing has become a very sensitive topic, and the whole question of adoption as well has become a very sensitive topic, and we have a lot to learn from that. But I would sort of see that Pope Francis was really just, I suppose, almost just putting a question there or a challenge, and didn't really mean to offend, but unfortunately a lot of people have taken offence with this.
Yeah. those comments haven't had as much publicity here in the UK. And so, you know, I haven't seen a great reaction to them here, but perhaps I just missed it. And perhaps we've all been so blindsided by the controversy going on about parties and COVID and things. But yes, I can see that people would be very upset by those comments. So perhaps we'll find that the Holy Father will clarify his statement. That seems to be the way people get around things like that.
Yeah, I suppose it also reflected for me, I suppose, there are times, I think, in all of our lives, Stephen, where maybe something that you or I might say just heard in a different way from what we intended. And sometimes I think we have to give the benefit of the doubt around those. And I think what I've tried to do in life is that very often you look at, well, what's the character who is saying this? What has their general tone be? Is this something that's sort of out of character to some extent with their general stance? And we have to negotiate around that. There will always be, I suppose, challenges and difficulties in what we say and the way we say it and how it is heard. And that's a struggle that all of us have to engage with in life and in our relationships.
Yeah, and it's something that I think has been made more difficult with social media, because now if you say something, suddenly someone will be offended and will take to their keyboard and start banging out comments. And of course, it's then in what they call this echo chamber where other people with similar views take it up. And so it all gets blown up out of all proportion just through the ability of people almost without thinking to be able to comment and get publicity for what they've said. And, you know, that's something that never used to happen. When we look back 20 or so years ago, Jerry, we could say something and that would be that. But now, of course, every comment, everyone who takes offence, and that's the thing now, people are more willing to take offence at what's said, and they take to their keyboards and suddenly there's a storm created.
Well, coming up on our programme, the whole topic which Pope Francis was addressing about family life and about adoption and about the struggles of family life is going to be touched on in our book review, because Sue O'Brien is going to be presenting in conversation with you a book review that deals with the whole topic of domestic violence, which has raised its head, particularly during the lockdown and the restrictive period that COVID has presented. So we look forward to hearing that particular book interview. And maybe at this time, while we are addressing the whole topic of family life and the burdens and the strains that are being put on it at this time, you know, it's good maybe to remember and to pray for that. Like in today's gospel, in the gospel we had in our churches today, it was about the marriage feast of Cana and about the transformative way in which Jesus intervened at that particular festival. And let's ask for the Lord in some way to help and transform the situations that we're all experiencing and the difficulties we're experiencing, that they will be transformed by his gracious love and mercy for all of us.
Yeah, no, that's true, Jerry, yeah.
Well, my regards to Francis and to all your family over there, Stephen, and for a while more, I think we'll be conversing like this over the airwaves. But we do look forward to the time when we will be able to meet face to face again.
Indeed. And in fact, last week I was saying, oh, it's great Ryanair have reopened the route from Shannon to Luton, which is the main route that we use. And of course, in the week we heard, sadly, that during January anyway, they've stopped that. They've reduced their services, you know, not just in Ireland, but across Western Europe, they've cut them. And so as a result, in January, they are no longer flying from Shannon to Luton. So I fear it may be a bit longer before we get back.
Well, meanwhile, keep safe and well over there, Stephen. And thank you for conversing with us here this evening on Beyond Belief.
My pleasure as ever, Jerry. Thank you.
Day after day, I must face a world of strangers where I don't belong. Not that strong. It's nice to know that there's someone I can turn to who will always care. You're always there.
Voice there of Ronan Keating and I Won't Live a Day Without You. You're tuned to Beyond Belief here on Clare FM on this Sunday evening, the 16th of January. Earlier this week on the Morning Focus programme here on Clare FM, Bishop Fintan Moran chatted with Alan Morrissey, the presenter of Morning Focus, about the way in which the church has been affected during the period of COVID. We listen now to that interview from Morning Focus of last Tuesday.
Now, more than a fifth of Ireland's entire population of parish priests and brothers, and that's both serving and retired, have died in just 3 years. According to the Association of Catholic Priests, the dwindling number of priests and brothers will mean that parishes are going to have to be amalgamated, churches closed, and fewer masses held. So could we see parishes in Clare having no choice other than to merge? Well, joining us for more on this is Bishop Fintan Monaghan, the Bishop of the Killaloe Diocese. Good morning to you, Bishop.
Good morning, Alan.
Thank you very much for joining us. These numbers seem very, very big. And I guess these changes, you know, they've been threatening for some time. How far away, though, are we from seeing fewer masses, closed churches and amalgamated parishes in Clare, do you feel?
Well, it's something that has been addressed on an ongoing basis in Killaloe for a long time, Alan, I suppose really since the turn of the millennium, where proactively in the diocese, parishes were, the term that was used was clustered, which was a kind of a twinning of two or three or four. And of the 58 parishes, 12 clusters were put together. And then in 2018, we changed the term. We called them pastoral areas. And now we have now 15 pastoral areas. And all of that was in an attempt to address this that has been coming down the tracks since, I suppose, the 1980s, where there has been a huge decline in the numbers of clergy and religious. And but then on the other hand, the reformation that is there is that more and more lay people are getting involved, which is fantastic, you know, so that it's kind of a mixed bag from that point of view, a decline of an old model and something new beginning to emerge really in so many ways.
Certainly I've heard the use of lay people rather mentioned quite a bit as a potential solution. Bishop, other solutions, women priests, would that be something you'd be in favour of? And also importing priests from abroad is something where we're seeing priests come from places like Romania and other countries to Ireland. Is that something that's already happening in Clare?
It is. At the moment, we have we've one priest from Poland and we have five from India that are working in the diocese. And in relation to women and men working in the diocese, we're so delighted that we have 24 lay people, mainly women actually, that are qualifying as lay ministers in the area of pastoral care and catechesis or being catechists. And they're going to be commissioned at Easter of this year, and they'll get pastoral placements then later on in the year. So that will be a huge boost to us. And apart from that, you know, you have teams of people working in pastoral councils and doing an awful lot of good work, you know, visiting the sick and helping the bereaved and many other areas. So there's an awful lot of good work going on. But just going back to those statistics, the statistics don't lie indeed, because when I came here 5.5 years ago, there were something like 110 priests. Since that, I'd say 25 or so have passed away. And an awful lot of the priests that are ministering are well over 75. So we're down to, I suppose, really about 50 priests for 58 parishes that are under 75 in active ministry. And that will reduce dramatically over the next while.
You've mentioned some of the potential solutions that are being explored, but do you think, is it fighting a losing battle in a sense? Do you think that we will see in Clare with the Catholic Church amalgamated parishes, closed churches and reduced services before the end of this decade, the 2020s?
Oh, very much so. That is coming rapidly. It's already happened, Alan, I suppose. With COVID in the last 18 months, that has hugely accelerated the decline in the numbers of people attending out of necessity, because it wasn't safe during a lot of that time. A lot of people have returned to Mass now, but not certainly in the same numbers. And there are other options where people can avail of electronic means to join in, which isn't the same, but at least it's an option at the moment. But already, we'll say, in a lot of little country areas that haven't reopened since the pandemic, and that may well just be the case, that there's such a small number they're attending. And pastoral area system has been in place, and we'll be exploring that whole thing of amalgamation, which is a step forward from, I suppose, the twinning process. Already it's in train in relation to the diocese, where the recent announcement was made that Clonfert and Galway, our near neighbours, are going to be twinned, you know, with one bishop between two. And I suppose the very same will be looked at very seriously in consultation with the different parishes. And I suppose there will be no other option. You see it already in the GA, which use the same parish system, where, you know, two and three parishes are joining together because of depopulation and out of necessity. Okay. You know, it's just in terms of rationalisation that makes sense, I suppose, really.
And just to finish, a two-pronged question for you. Is the Catholic Church in general, like in terms of direction from the Vatican. Are they doing all they can to avoid this reality that seems to be unfolding before us? And could we see a case in two or three decades where the Catholic Church is actually gone in, Clare, if these trends continue?
Well, I'd always be hopeful, as I suppose the heart of Christianity is a message of hope. The Church has gone through some very rough times in the last 2,000 years, and all you have to do is hop on the motorway and you see the ruins of what was there in terms of the monasteries and the changes that took place. And, you know, a new system emerges from the ashes of an old system, and as long as the faith is there, which the evidence that I see in linking in with people right across the diocese, the faith is very strong, the sense of spirituality, the sense of the presence of the Lord, I don't think it will disappear. I think it's something so central and important to so many people's lives, and it gives such a sense of meaning. So I think there one other little hopeful thing to get it in for the news for you. There's a synodal pathway that on an international basis that has just started, and that's a kind of a journeying together right across the world. Every Catholic parish will be invited to look at how the Church is going, plan for the future, see what we can do, how we can do things better. That process is in train right now at international level, and we'll have a prolonged version of that in Ireland for the next 5 years. That's in an attempt to address the various issues that you've just outlined there, Alan.
Okay, we have to leave it there. But Bishop Fintan Monaghan, thank you so much for your time and on the programme this morning. Appreciate it.
You're welcome, and a Happy New Year to you and all your listeners.
And same to yourself. Bishop Fintan Monaghan there, the Bishop of the Killaloe Diocese.
That interview with Bishop Fintan Monaghan by Ellen Morrissey was courtesy of Morning Focus here on Clare FM earlier this week.
We are tuned to Beyond Belief on this Sunday evening, and it's time for another book review, and I'm very pleased to have been joined again by Sue O'Brien. Good evening, Sue.
Good evening, Stephen. Very nice to be with you again.
Yeah, thank you. And what book have you been looking at this week?
I thought I'd talk about what I'd call an issue book, and I don't think people should be put off by that, because it is actually a book I took on holiday with me and read lying on a sun lounger by the swimming pool. And it's a very easy to read book because it is written by a woman who is a professional writer, but it is her own memoir, and it's quite a shocking read. But it's a book which I think is important for people to read, or at least think about. And it's a book which you don't have to like the person who writes it to acknowledge the reality of what they're writing about. And it's a book called Look What You Made Me Do. The writer is a woman called Helen Walmsley Tomlinson. And mainly, the book is a memoir of the coercive, controlling and abusive relationship she entered into with a man when she was in her 40s. And it is quite a fascinating insight into an extraordinary psychology, actually.
And that, of course, is something that is getting worse during the lockdowns and during the pandemic. Apparently, domestic abuse is on the rise now.
Well, I think certainly it's probably been very difficult for people in abusive relationships during lockdown. So it may well not be that it's on the rise, but simply that people who might have been able to escape for some hours during the working day and so on from an extraordinarily intolerable situation have then not been able to do so. And the book that I'm talking about gives a lot of different statistics, but I've written a little article for Clare Champion where I looked at statistics of domestic abuse. And shockingly, in the UK, 2 women a week are killed by abusive partners. And in the United States, for example, the biggest cause of death for a pregnant woman is murder by her partner, by the father of her child. So that's extraordinary, I think. And the statistics in Ireland are equally not good. But this is an interesting book. It's written off the back of, I think she felt empowered to write it because there is a long-running English radio soap opera called The Archers. And I don't know when The Archers began. I don't know, it the 1950s began, or something.
It began 70 years ago because I know that because they celebrated their 70th birthday. A couple of weeks ago, I saw a feature on it, and one of their biggest fans, who's the Duchess of Cambridge, was there with one of the actors who is 102 and has been with it since most of its time. Peggy, she plays Peggy in The Archers. And she's 102. So it keeps on going, but anyway, that's an aside.
So The Archers ran a long-running, in real-time story about a character called Helen, who met a lovely man called Rob, who was terribly nice to her child, and they fell in love, and, you know, you were all rooting for Helen to get married to this man. And Rob sort of seemed a tiny bit bossy to start with. But, you know, nothing that you would think twice about. But he became this sort of pure embodiment of a nightmare for Helen because he was controlling her all the time. And he was not doing domestic abuse in the way that we might imagine it, where you have somebody being hit all the time. He was just controlling her. He was controlling her money. He was controlling her life. He was making her life absolutely his. She wasn't allowed to wear what he didn't want her to wear. He tried to take her child from her. And the distress that she had and the way that he covered it up, it became part of a sort of national conversation in the UK.
Yeah.
And this is what empowered this woman to write about her 10-year relationship with a very suave, charming Frenchman who she fell in love with. And she was by then in her 40s. She'd been married before. She'd been unhappily married to a man who had taken, who had controlled her through his family. And she had escaped from him with her daughters. They'd had a big custody battle for her children, which she had won. And then she was working and she was quite a successful woman. And then she met this Frenchman and they started a relationship. Everyone was delighted for them. But he was this controlling man. And in the end, and because I was on holiday and I was with my husband, so I was sort of talking to him about it all the time, because in the end, we decided that the relationship is like that of a slave owner and a slave. And slaves could sometimes actually show affection and have affection shown to them by their owners. It was a bizarre relationship. But the reality is that the slave owner does not regard the slave as a human being. You know, not as a fully equal human. And this is what was going on with this woman. And she was trapped with this man. And I think one of the things that people always ask is, why does she stay with him? What is she doing? You know, why doesn't she just go? And my husband said to me, I'm fascinated that we always ask what's going on in the victim's head. We never seem to ask what's going on in the man's head. Why is he behaving like that? You know, what on earth is going on? He, you know, actually most men couldn't imagine doing that. Why do we always want to blame the woman who's staying, the woman who is the victim of the relationship, and never turn the spotlight on the person who is treating her so badly? Now, I would also add, you don't have to like the woman who writes this book. I mean, I didn't particularly like her, actually. But I did feel terribly sad for her. And she got the courage, which I think was a huge amount of courage, to get away from him in the end. And she was a resourceful, intelligent, successful person. and yet she allowed herself to be undermined by this man for years. And the other thing with coercive control is it may not look like classic domestic abuse as we see it, where the man hits the woman, but actually there will be an element of that as they continue to exert their power over their partner. They will probably hurt her, and this man did.
Mm-hmm.
So quite a shocking book, but a truly interesting one, actually. Very, very interesting. And if you read it, you will think about... I mean, you know, it is a very thought-provoking book. She's done a certain amount of research. So within the book, there are lots and lots of different statistics, and they are quite extraordinary, actually.
Yeah, thank you, Sue. And I'm sure there are charities, you know, perhaps you could give us the name of a charity where people could get help, because this is a hidden crime, isn't it?
Exactly. So I think for anybody who is worried about someone or who is worried about themselves, or this has happened to them in the past and they'd like to talk about it with someone, I would strongly recommend that they go to Women's Aid in the first instant. And Women's Aid is an Irish charity which has a 24-hour national free phone helpline. And the telephone number is 1800 341 900. So that's 1800 341 900.
Thank you, Sue. It sounds a very interesting book. Just give us the name of that book again, please.
And it's called Look What You Made Me Do. The writer is a woman called Helen Walmsley Tomlinson.
Well, thank you so much, Sue. And so we look forward to hearing you next week, I think.
Lovely. Okay.
Thank you very much.
You. It's been a great pleasure to be with you.
And what better piece of music to go out to than Dionne Warwick? What the world needs now is love.
What the world needs now is love, sweet love. It's the only thing that there's just too little of. But what the world needs now is love, sweet love. No, not just for some, but for everyone. Lord, we don't need another mountain. There are mountains and hillsides enough to climb. There are oceans and rivers enough to cross, enough to last till the end of time. What the world needs now is love, sweet love. It's the only thing that there's just too little love. What the world needs now is love, sweet love. No, not just for some, but for everyone. Lord, we don't need another meadow. There are cornfields and wheat fields enough to grow. There are sunbeams and moonbeams enough to shine. Oh, listen, Lord, if you want to know. There's just too little love. What the world needs.
You're tuned to Beyond Belief here on Clare FM on this Sunday, the 16th of January. As we move through these early weeks of the new year, perhaps you've been trying to make some resolution of something to do to better yourself in the coming year. The art of spiritual direction, whereby we look at our own inner life in the light of God and faith, has been part and parcel of the journey of Christianity and of major religions right since the beginning. In the coming weeks, we're going to be bringing you some short extracts from podcasts made by Father Brian Grogan, an Irish Jesuit, on the topic of spiritual direction.
I'm going to begin by talking of spiritual direction with the help of a few images that we all are familiar with. The first image, and it's a very common one, is that life is a journey. We say at somebody's death that their journey is complete, or they have reached the end of their journey. And everybody understands that kind of language, that kind of imagery. So there are familiar journeys and unfamiliar journeys. On a familiar journey, you can go alone. You don't need help because you've been perhaps over this journey a number of times already. It's familiar to you. But there are other journeys which are unfamiliar. For instance, if you are interested in exploring and you want to get into the Amazon forest, you would be well advised to bring somebody with you, to have a guide, to have somebody who is more familiar than you are with this terrain. Similarly, if you're a climber and you want to get to the top of Mount Everest, you better get a guide, or else you'll end up falling down crevices or being overcome by avalanches and so on. So that idea of a guide being necessary when you're on unfamiliar territory is commonplace. We know that. Now, the spiritual direction area, though, doesn't deal with these exterior journeys, but with the inner journey. The journey that each of us within ourselves goes on, enters into inevitably. We're on it whether we like it or not. And this is not a familiar journey. We do need a guide. And that guide is what we call a spiritual director. And the help that he or she gives is spiritual direction. Deliberately use the term inner journey or inner life to avoid saying spiritual journey or spiritual life for the moment, because spiritual as a word is confusing for many people and it's very easily misunderstood. Whereas most people know what you're talking about when you talk about an inner life. It's that hidden but very important coming together of thinking and feeling and having emotions and being joyful and being sad, being turbulent, being at peace. All of that that people outside you can't actually see. You can talk to them about it, but they can't actually see it. It's inner. It's your personal way of experiencing being in the world. That's what a spiritual director is going to meet and try to help you to understand and help you to find a direction in that. Decision making is often one of the most important parts of this role of spiritual director. Not that the director makes the decisions, but that he facilitates or she facilitates the other person's making of the decision. So this inner life is recognizable. It's the experience of every human being. Now, to get on to the word spiritual, if we use the word spiritual, we're actually moving more towards a religious interpretation of the term. Everybody has an inner life, whether they're a believer or not, atheist or Christian or whatever. But when we say spiritual life, then that usually links in with parts of that person's religious beliefs as to the reality of spirit and some understanding of what they mean when they use the word spirit.
Title of that piece of music is No Eye Can See. And before that we heard from Brian Grogan, an Irish Jesuit, on spiritual direction. If you would like to find out more about spiritual direction, well then the Irish Jesuit website has plenty of information and contacts for you. Also, if you make contact with any priest or religious that you know, they will be able to help you and give you some information on where you may contact those registered as spiritual directors to guide you.
Beyond Belief on Clare FM.
Time now in our programme for a little reflection on this Sunday evening. Father Liam Lawton joins us with a little prayer at night time.
Prayer for nightfall. Lord, the day is gathering to a close, and the night will soon be upon us. Let the layers of life bless this day by people, presence, and place. Find rest neath the shadow of your care. Renew, restore, repair all promises broken are unfulfilled. Calm all angst and anger, so that we carry no hurt or hate into a restful sleep. May each heart beat in rhythm with every monastic prayer sung throughout this night, in chorus with the whole universe, in harmony with each star and each galaxy, in union with every voice of every angel in all of creation. May we dream dreams of a healed world, where no heart is gripped by fear or terror, nor love destroyed by human error. May the ease of sleep come to all who struggle, all who weep in lonely fields, all who toil with pitiful yield, all who yearn for their hearts to heal. Surround us, Lord. Surround us that we may surrender to sleep under your watchful keep. May we wake to your unfolding day, new moments of grace, where we might glimpse, O Lord, your face.
Piece of music, In Beauty We Walk by Ian Callanan, takes us close to the end of our programme this Sunday evening. Thank you for joining with us here on Beyond Belief this Sunday evening. We'll be with you again next Sunday in the morning at 9 o'clock for the celebration of Mass, and later on Sunday evening at 9 o'clock for Beyond Belief. I do hope that you have a very peaceful week ahead, and we pray God's blessing upon you. Thank you for your company. Keep warm and safe. Slán agus spenach.